Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
I'm your other host, Beowulf.
And we are back for another episode of Hunt the Truth Discussions, this time episode 6. We have Ben missing deadlines. We have people breaking into his house. We have things getting contradicted and things not pulling together and threads getting more and more loose. Anyways, we have Godzilla T back on the hot seat with us tonight as we start to dive into episode 6, Boxing Story. And of course, we have from the very end last time where he missed his deadline, and we actually had something pretty special this time around in the episode. So some people who follow Ready Up Live probably know that they were taking submissions for people to have their voice featured, and boy, were there a lot of them. If you listen to the episode for about the first 4.5 minutes, we were inundated with voices from across the Halo fandom. Yeah, that makes sense. So Bio's voice was in there. I know he said he was in there. What did you submit for this since you were in there?
I basically just submitted how Ben needed to stay out of Chief's business. Like, he's basically saved the human race countless times.
Yeah, he's in the toilet, he's taking a dump, he's taking care of his own business.
but no, I mean, like, he's done all these different things to help and save human race countless times. And it's like, why is it all of a sudden matter where Chief's from? You know, why is all of a sudden his background story matter? You know, it shouldn't. No, it's that. I mean, there's three different topics, but I think that one kind of stood out to me the most. Like, Ben doesn't have any business looking into the Chief's past. I mean, there were some pretty good ones in there too. Like the journalist one by the Australian dude was pretty funny. Who else was there? There was a bunch of them. I mean, there was I would say a good 100 voices going all at once. It seemed like it was crazy.
It was pretty insane. I wonder
it
how
was
many.
Pretty unintelligible.
Yeah, that's for sure. Right? I wonder how many of them were professional voice acted versus how many of them were from the community. Because my guess is a lot of the ones that we heard that were clearly audible were professional voice actors, and then a lot of the ones were it was just a deluge of voices were the ones that the community sent in. Because I know Green Skull did a video on the one that he did. And you could barely make it out what he said in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, everything was so overlapped. But I think in the very beginning where that – I can't remember exactly what he said. But I think in the very beginning, I think that was community too. Like, there was a couple – I think all the ones in the very beginning were community. Like, it had one person, then that overlapped on another, and then on another. Like, there was a couple of people in the community that I did point out that you could clearly hear. It just kind of overlapped. So, like, I'm sure those were all – community members talking, but I don't think the ones like it was at the part where they were talking about Oni was bad or something like that. I can't remember exactly what they were talking about, but it was in the beginning where they're all community members, I think.
Okay. Interesting to know. So the part with the voices, let's kind of dive in here, is after a couple of days, actually probably a week or so after he started sending out these episodes. So I think it's safe to say now that the first 5 episodes of Hunt the Truth were things that Ben had already posted. So I think we kind of hit a transition point with the actual podcast where we have the 5 episodes leading up to that deadline point is when we actually hear him put everything together, add his little audio bits in there, and that's a clean separation of from episode 5 to episode 6. Would you guys agree with that, or do you think there's still kind of some overlap? Because I know from later on in the episode that we obviously have through episode 3 out there.
Yeah, I would say episode 4 because Petro was a little upset.
Was she episode 4?
Putting it lightly. Yeah, okay. Because episode 5 is when he did the...
That's right.
Episode 5 is when he did the Oni.
Right.
So I would say we're up to at least episode 5. It may not have aired yet. Because the way he kind of made it sounded like this hasn't been just a few days past the deadline. This is a few weeks.
So,
you know, like 2 or 3 weeks.
what I could tell was there was maybe a few days after he missed the deadline that Oni was calling him, and then finally got one call from Sully. And we don't know how long Oni was trying to call him while Ben was piecing together the episodes, but I don't imagine what that would have been more than a week. And then Ben said there was a few days of silence from Oni after he uploaded the episodes. And he really doesn't go into detail on whether or not he uploaded them just all at once or sequentially or what. But I would assume for something that big that you don't want Oni to really stop, you would upload everything at once.
Mm-hmm.
Judging by that. And then he said there were a few days where there was just complete silence. And then he started getting flooded with messages for 4 days up to this point. So I'm judging maybe 2 to 3 weeks after he's uploaded. Yeah. After he missed the deadline. And maybe 2 weeks or so after he started uploading the podcasts. Now that's just my idea behind it.
He could have also uploaded it and set them to release on a schedule or something like that. They don't give you any details, so this is just all what each individual person thinks.
Yeah.
But I would agree with you. I think from the time of his deadline to the time that we are at in this episode is probably about 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think that's where we are with that. It's just this dead silence from Oni, though, is raising up a lot of red flags. It's like he's digging his own grave, and he's digging it deep, it seems. I mean, when you got, if you're working for an organization with like Oni, and you're going to sit there and not do what they told you and paying you to do, I mean, not to mention, like, apparently he was getting paid a lot. Did we ever figure out exactly how much he was getting paid? I don't remember.
120,000 credits.
Okay, well, still, that's that's a lot of money. So they're going to sit there and pay you that much, and if you're expected to do what you're supposed to do and you don't, and you're going to start leaking stuff on the internet, you're in trouble. Like, you got some trouble coming your way.
So my question is, at this point, though, what is Oni doing to really combat that other than, of course, trying to suppress it? Because we don't really know anything from the standpoint of what Oni's doing, because this is really focusing on Ben's perspective right now, and we don't really get anything outside of the response that Ben was getting, and then, of course, the visit from Petra and Ray. So I'm interested to see for the next episode if we're going to hear anything about what Oni's trying to do to counter what Ben has done or to suppress what Ben has done in response. Because, I mean, of course, once Ben started uploading the episodes, that's when Oni stopped contacting him because, I mean, they pretty much figured out he's not following through and submitting his stuff. He's doing his own thing. And they know where he lives. It's not like Oni doesn't know
where
what's,
he's at. I mean,
what's
they got,
probably going on. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they have his house is bugged. You know, I mean, if they honestly really wanted to stop it, like this is something that kind of came up in my head. If they honestly wanted to stop it, they could have done it before those things leak, especially if he was talking about it, especially if he was listening to over and over what's different things. And like if they were keeping track of his internet searches and uploads and everything like that, like they could have stopped it. They could have. So it makes me wonder why they allowed it go as far as it did.
They may have not allowed it, though, judging by what we learned later on, that Mashaq was actually in his systems for the past 3, 4, 5 weeks or so.
True.
I know we're going to be skipping a lot around this episode, guys, because there's just so much that happens that we're not going to really be able to, I think, follow a chronological order this time around.
No.
Yeah, this is kind of the random episode.
Well, we'll hit on all the points, but I don't think we're going to go in the sequential order on the episode, or we're going to be jumping around a lot. We'll try to stick as much to sequential as possible, but we've already jumped around to 5 different parts of the episode. Just saying. But yeah, we know Mashaq has been in his systems for a while, and if it's something that he's playing a part, he could have helped secure Ben's upload of the podcast, because as we find out, and this actually disproves what we thought last week, but Mashaq was the one that set up the itinerary for Ben and Jacob Walker to see each other on the same flight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not like he's loading these podcasts up on Waypoint. You know, he's not putting this out. I mean, he's putting it out to the public, but he's not putting it out on the, you know, on the regular channels. You know, people are finding out about this via word of mouth, not because it's, you know, blasted across the entire internet. So, you know, it could be, you know, that could be the reason why Oni hasn't taken it down, because it's kind of on the black market of internet. You know, there's even right now, you know, in our time, there's, you know, there's websites out there that operate under no, you know, no control over the, you know, regulating authorities.
Right. They have no jurisdiction.
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, is if there is that black market, do you think people would sit there and download it or upload it to spread it out even more? You know, if people are really against Oni and they know that they have such a huge suspicious history, wouldn't someone want this news, this whole podcast deal, like everything that Ben's found out so far, wouldn't they want that out there? Like, yeah, granted, Oni would try to take it down, but like once that one download turns into millions, you're never going to be able to get that off.
Exactly.
Like I said, you know, you get it out there on the, you know, on the underground net, and then, you know, next thing you know, it's everywhere.
Right. Yeah. Ben's upload was a spark that turned into a blazing fire.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's obviously something that Oni, I don't think, was fully expecting. I think once they flagged his conversation with Thomas Wu, they knew that Ben was obviously getting shifty on the news that he was actually getting. I'm not sure if they exactly thought that he was going to be just uploading stuff straight away. I think they were probably assuming that he was going to make his own story and try to push it out that way. But I think kind of the sudden decision to just put it out there may have been underestimated on Oni's part, because like we've heard from previous episodes, Ben has always been one to follow orders to the letter without questioning it. And for some reason this time, he decided to go all gung-ho doing his own thing.
Yeah, he decided to be the rebel. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Some dire consequences.
Yeah. You know, I'd agree with that. You know, they could have said, you know, just thought to themselves, okay, well, he's going to put this the whole story together and either, you know, send it to us or, you know, put it out on, you know, an approved media source.
Right.
Or, you know, a mainstream media source, I should say. And then he turns around and just basically goes right behind their back and shoots this out to the dark net and, you know, putting all that stuff out there that they don't want the public to know.
So for the public internet thing, I think for for the way that Ben put this out there, I bet it probably got to the public internet at some points. And I mean, of course, Oni's trying to take that down, but because of so many people having it and spreading it around, I think initially it would have been hard to make it last up there. And I think that's why going kind of the dark side of Waypoint or whatever network, I guess Chatternet, starting it that way, then it just spreads like wildfire across that network and then subsequent networks after that.
It just makes me wonder, though, who actually got a hold of this. Like, who else are we going to see jump into the next podcast that is going to have an interest in it? You know, maybe someone from UNSC or, like, someone higher up that maybe
Pharaoh.
Yeah, someone. Like, it's going to be interesting to see, since he did light this fire, so to speak, and everything is just completely blowing up at the moment. It really, really does make me wonder who's next to pick this up and who, if it is that way, if who else is going to back Jarreau.
To Jarreau's point, though, also, he doesn't even know what to do with all the responses that he's getting, all the messages he's receiving from everyone across the galaxy, basically, both the inner and the outer colonies. He has no idea what to do with at the moment because there's just so much data to go through.
I mean, if it all depends on who the person, like the maybe an organization or person is. Like, if Oni can sit there and trace where he's at, so can the higher up people that are willing to help him, if that is the case. They could, like, they won't sit there and send a message, be like, this is a UNSC and we want to investigate, yada, yada, yada. Like, they're going to send someone out there to find where he's at. You know what I mean? They're not going to send messages.
Well, I think on the next episode, we're going to find out that Ben's in hiding. Because in this episode, he's at his own home. And I think the next episode, he's going to be, you know, Mashak is going to stuff him away in some corner somewhere and try to hide him from Oni.
On Pharaoh's orders.
Yeah.
Just saying, you know, that's, at least that's what I think. There's a lot around this Pharaoh entity that's built up right at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have a theory, I think I put this out on Twitter, that given what's at the end of the episode, that it could be Dr. Halsey, but someone replied to me and now I'm not so sure in my theory.
Well, someone did a breakdown on that and it spells out Dr. Halsey.
The video, not Pharaoh.
Yeah, the video. So it's like, I mean, you know, why would they put something like that in there? It's just, I think Dr. Halsey's going to show up somehow. I just don't know how. Because, I mean, it's not like Yulam Dama is going to let her make a phone call to human space. But she's going to work her way in there somehow, and I just don't know how.
Well, she's smart. Like, if she honestly wanted to sit there and get some sort of information, get her out somewhere, she can come up with some kind of little device, or maybe she could have an intelligent hologram of herself that will project ideas that will maybe have questions, like something scientific. I'm sure it'll pop up. I mean, and then that will transmit back to her little compad. I mean, look what she did in Spartan Ops. Like, she did that whole, she was downloading everything that the UNSC already knew in Spartan Ops. I'm sure she can get a whole bunch of information get out there too.
Well, I understand that, but you know, when she's on the Infinity, yes, she is a prisoner, but she's still, you know, they still have to, well, I guess they don't have to, but they still, you know, give her basic human rights, where, you know, the Covenant, she's a worm. You know, that's what they think of as.
Yeah.
So, you know, her level of access to Covenant systems is very different than, you know, what kind of access she has to human systems. You know, it's like when she took over Roland, the reason she was able to do that is because she knew the system from the simple fact that she designed it. You know, she knew the override codes and all this stuff. Well, you know, granted, she knows a lot about Covenant systems, but she's not as adept, or she doesn't have as much knowledge of Covenant systems as she did of the human systems, because, you know, she built a lot of them.
Well, I mean, she's got to have some sort of knowledge with the Covenant. I mean, like you said, she doesn't know a lot, but she has to have a lot, given the fact that she was trying to take down the Covenant at one time. You know what I mean? Like, she had to have some sort of information to where if she was ever in a situation where she could get out of that, maybe to where she could hack out of jail cells or something stupid like that. I mean, look what she, like you said before, look what she did with Roland. Like, she knows things. Like, she's smart. Like, I'm sure somewhere along the line she had some sort of sources to let her know a whole bunch of information.
And she studied a lot of foreigner tech anyways, and there's a lot of Covey tech that's based off of foreigner tech too. So there,
yeah. Yep.
I mean, yeah, she's smart on UNSC stuff. She's probably one of the more knowledgeable people on Covenant and foreigner stuff too, from a technological standpoint.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, they're going to be watching Halsey very closely. So, I mean, it's not,
if they know where she is. It's not something that,
well, as it stands in the universe right now, Jewel knows exactly where she is.
Yeah.
You know, as it stands right
now, UNSC. No,
the UNSC doesn't. I'm just talking about the Covenant only.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Oni controlling stuff here.
Well, it kind of shifted the subject when we brought up Halsey. But anyway, I find it hard to believe it would be really easy for Halsey to contact Ben in, you know, in any kind of real, long conversation or anything like that. Now, she may be able to redirect, you know, information to him, which is kind of what Pharaoh is doing, or what looks like Pharaoh will be doing. But it's kind of, we just got to wait and see.
The thing with having Halsey be Pharaoh is what I've been told, that she's at the absolute record right now from the Escalation comics. And mm-hmm. I don't really know how this coincides timeline wise with the comics. I think I brought that up a couple weeks ago. I mean, it could be Halsey. It could not be Halsey. I just don't know, with her interest, at least with the Janus Key and all the Foreigner tech, if something like Chief's origin story is something that's a big topic for her to address at this point.
I think it would be. I really do. I think it is. It's because she has such an interest in Chief. I mean, when she found out that Chief was alive, she freaked out, basically. She didn't know, like, the fact that they were hiding that from her was an insult. And she's one of Chief's, or Chief is basically one of her greatest creations. And the fact that he is being labeled as this traitor, I'm sure that's going to appeal to her more than what she is. I mean, granted, like, the Forerunner stuff and Janus Key and all the Forerunner objects and all that stuff is, like, top priority. But the fact that she has such a connection with John, I'm sure that mm-hmm. brings up another deal too. So I'm sure in her mind, you know, why is it that, or what is the UNSC or ONI up to label my creation as something that he's saved the human race countless times? You know what I mean? Like, why is it all of a sudden that he is being labeled as this traitor everybody seems to be talking about? You know, I'm sure that that's popped up in her mind several times. So I'm sure that somewhere along the line, she is trying to find out more about it.
Well, we also don't know how much information she's getting from the human colonies either.
True.
I mean, you know, honestly, if she's at the absolute record, she could be getting no intel as far as what's going on, you know, something small like this, you know, comparatively. I mean, you know, this isn't fleet movements or anything, you know, which Jules forces would be watching. You know, this is a trivial piece of information, so she may not know this is even going on.
And I think that's the more likely scenario.
I don't know. I think she does. Especially how she's constantly keeping up with... she has tabs on ONI and UNSC. Like, you know she does. I mean, especially if they're coming after her or something like that. I'm sure that she has some sort of information about Chief.
Well, it's been proven in the past that Dr. Halsey only knows what... Dr. Halsey only knows what ONI lets her know.
Yeah, situation's changed. No, I mean, like that
she's not under ONI control anymore, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if she
well, like I said, in the past, the information that she was able to glean was information that ONI let her have.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're gonna find out a little bit more about Halsey than we think we're seeing her as, like, right now. I think maybe not in Hunt the Truth exactly, but I think somewhere this will tie in with Hunt the Truth and Halo 5. I really do. Like, I really think that that's going to be kind of the crossing point. Maybe she does end up finding something about Chief or something like that, or she finds Jor-El and sends him a message and they kind of go back and forth message-wise, you know, kind of low profile, no one knows where she's at type deal. They're constantly going back and forth with her. And then somewhere along the Halo 5, they kind of tie it in.
I do think there's going to be a Halo 5 tie-in with Halsey. As far as seeing it in Hunt the Truth, my original thought of maybe Dr. Halsey being Pharaoh, I'm not really as sure in that anymore, and I don't know if we'll really see Dr. Halsey in Hunt the Truth. I'm thinking Pharaoh's probably someone else now.
Well, we just have to wait and see. It's the only thing we can do. I hope it's Halsey.
It's Franklin Mendez.
That wouldn't even make sense.
I know.
Sorry, but I get the joke, but that wouldn't even make sense, dude.
It's laughing. You know, it has to be somebody that knows Chief.
Glasky.
It could be, but...
Lasky and Palmer are trying to find Chief so he can be the ring bearer. That's how it's going to happen. That's what it's all boiling down to.
Oh, okay. That kind of came out of left field.
But
As soon as he said Lasky, I knew it was coming.
But no, it would be interesting if it was Lasky, though. I mean, Lasky knows Chief. It would be interesting to see if that was him.
Oh, I just got an interesting thought. Okay, you know, we've had the Cortana discussion 5 bazillion times.
And we'll have it again 5 bazillion times.
I'm sure. What if it's Cortana?
If that was Cortana, if that was Cortana, or if it is Cortana, people would flip out. That would be like the ultimate plot twist right there.
I mean, really, who is the one entity that would be the most vested in protecting Chief?
How would she even be reaching out, though? The only place that we know that she probably exists is on
some
Forerunner shield world or shield installation.
Exactly, where she has access to Forerunner technology.
What if it's not Cortana? Maybe. Well, Librarian's not alive. I was going to say Librarian.
Her fragment's been destroyed with Requiem.
The only thing I could think of is Pharaoh's a code word for something that's similar in meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not good with associations like that, and I don't know enough about the Halo fiction to even begin making assumptions on what kind of a keyword association Pharaoh could have to anybody that we've seen in the Halo fiction.
It's Johnson. He came back from the dead. He's trying to get a hold of Chief to team up with him. Halo 5 plot twist right there. There you go.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think it, you know, who else would be, you know, that vested, you know, that involved with Chief to go to these links to what it seems like help him.
Well, I mean, that's just it right there. Everybody that has that kind of connection to him is A, missing, or B, they're off doing their own thing. You know, Halsey's off doing her own thing. Cortana's MIA. You don't really know what's going on with her just yet. Just D-UNSC isn't exactly happy with Chief, so maybe some from the inside is trying to help him. And I mean, that could lead to Lasky. It's an endless list of. I mean, maybe it's. I would. Maybe Thorn, but he doesn't have any kind of.
He didn't have any real connection to Chief.
Is Thorn a girl?
No, Thorn.
Gabriel?
From Spartan Assault?
Thorn a girl?
Or not. No, Thorn is not a girl.
No.
Pharaoh's a girl.
Oh, right. I'm thinking that this. Wow. All right.
Yeah, you know, that's just it. You know, there's not that many female characters in Chief's life.
I mean, you got two. Well,
doesn't necessarily have to be Chief's life, though.
Well, it has to be somebody that is. Okay, it's Perrin Gosky.
Too much the only connection. We'll table this for next week. We've talked about this way too long already. Going back to the beginning of the episode, since we've focused so much on the end of the episode, we have, well, I guess we already talked about the Oni calls and how those stopped, and we really haven't talked about what Ben kind of concluded from all the messages that he got, and that was basically reinforcing Ellie Bloom's story, that there was no boxing on Eridanus 2, that there was no insurrectionist occupation in Elysium City, and that, yes, glass planets have bad records. Those are the three things that Ben said was corroborated from the messages that he received in his voicemail box. On top of that, completely discrediting Dion Govender, the boxing coach. So he is just everything he said was a big, fat lie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I don't think that's really surprising after everything that we've heard.
No, I mean, once again, it's Oni. They're going to sit there and do whatever they can to make it look like something else. You know, especially, like, he may have had unlimited access to things, but how many unlimited access things was he actually able to have access to? You know what I mean? Like they paint this image of, oh, you have everything at your disposal. Everything's right here. So if you want to do this, I'm sure somewhere along the lines when he start poking around, as we've seen before, someone's going to stop him. You know what I mean? Like, if he starts looking into things a little too much, things will start poking at. So, like, when he found that out, I'm sure a lot of stuff was going through Oni's head right then.
Well, it's, you know, just like the interview that he had with Mendez. Once he asked that one question about Chief having that much responsibility,
mm-hmm.
he got cut off right then. the room flipped over. He had a request for Raw, solely telling him that his only option was to fly home and upload his recordings. I mean, that's the perfect example of him just getting stopped dead in his tracks. And that was something that Oni could control, whereas his contacts out to his own sources, like Petra said, Oni wasn't expecting him to do that because he had always just done everything to the book.
Yeah.
And this time is different.
Yeah, I mean, like, he complicated too many things. Like, he was really just digging into too much, which could pull out for him to be a good thing, especially if he nails this whole situation of Oni being shady. Like, this could bring out a different kind of story. You know, maybe this will lead to other things that we may find out later on. But it'd be it's interesting to see after everything's kind of taking this, well, he's looking like he's in trouble type deal, especially now. It's going to be interesting to see where the story goes from here. You know, where's Oni going to start doing things? Who else is going to be involved? Where's Ben going to go? Like, they built this up. Like, I'm extremely impressed with this whole Hunt the Truth podcast. Like, I really am. Like, I really didn't think it was going to be this intense, honestly. Like, I mean, the build up to E3, I think this is probably the perfect way to do it. I've said it before, and I'm like a broken record saying it, but I really do think this is probably the coolest way of doing it. I mean, videos is one thing, but having audio clips and different things like that is a lot easier. And it, like I said before, I like listening to
them. No, don't get me wrong. I love, I love when they do the live action stuff, but, you know, I was introduced to, you know, like the old school radio broadcasts when I was in my teens, and I fell in love with those. You know, the radio show, The Shadow, the Red Skelton Show, stuff like that, which, you know, required you to use your imagination.
Yeah.
To see what was going on. And, you know, that's what I'm really enjoying about this Hunt to Truth stuff is that, you know, everybody hears the same thing, but what they envision is totally different. So, you know, you get all these random theories of, you know, why Ben said this or why the person he interviewed said this and all this other stuff. As you said, it's just really intense.
Well, I mean, that's just it right there. I mean, you have all these wild theories that come together. Like, you start talking with people with different ideas. Like, say, for instance, me and Des have a different look on how one particular event happened. Those two things could add up into something else. Like, everything kind of connects either way. Like, you could have different looks on it. And it's just crazy some of the stuff people come up with after talking with other people that on their theories. So, like, all these little different things are poking around. Like, in people's imaginations, I mean, some of them are a little bit extreme. I'm kind of on that side, especially how I think with different things. But it is interesting to see how theories come from other theories. It's unique.
So the way I see it kind of going down with Ben is, you know how Sully has said that he's excited for the outcome of the story that is going to be huge for Ben?
Yeah.
I think the outcome is still going to be huge, but in a completely different way. I think Ben coming out and searching for the truth and putting the truth out there for people is going to herald him as a hero in that sense, instead of heralding him as the journalist who had this such great report on the chief that Oni had to paint. I think it's still going to be a great story, but not in the way that Oni had originally planned it.
Well, it just makes me wonder what outlooks people are going to have after this is all done. You know, people are hating him now, you know, as we heard from the community or from what we've seen, the community things. Like, people really put their emotions into it, and people seem to be disagreeing. Well, there is a majority of them disagreeing with what Jiro's doing. It really makes me wonder, after this is all said and done, after we get this final episode, what people's opinions are going to be on this whole situation then. You know, maybe he'll, I don't know. It's how this is going to turn out is going to be extremely interesting.
So one other thing I wanted to say was, one of the ways I kind of deem something to be good in this kind of thing is take a lot of people's general assumptions and have them completely turn out not that way. Makes it to where it's actually not quite as predictable.
Yep.
To that point, for us, we kind of came to the conclusion that because of Sully's past with Chief, that maybe Sully was the one that crossed itineraries with Walker and Ben.
Right.
And maybe color us idiots. I don't know if there were other people out there that maybe had the possible thought of Mashok being the one that did that. But a lot of us in here were convinced, and even Halo Cannon or Toa Freak from last week kind of agreed with the idea of maybe Sully was the one that did it. Maybe Sully was trying to slowly edge Ben on to reveal the truth. And we were completely wrong.
Well, I mean, like, it's going back to the whole imagination thing. You know, people are going to have different looks on it. I mean, that all of us having the same kind of idea. I mean, you got to look where Sully was in Ford on Tadon. You know what I mean? Like, where he kind of was kind of looking into the bigger story and things. And, like, the way he reacted when Ben talked to him, you know, it really brought out a different character that we thought he was. So it kind of pointed fingers at Sully, thinking that was that's what he did. But it's just crazy how the story can change.
And I thought that was kind of a cool little thing. And like I said, to me, it's awesome to see whenever there's kind of like a general consensus on something and it turns out to be wrong. And it turns out to be wrong for some really cool and fascinating reasons.
Oh, yeah.
So the fact that Mashok was the one that ended up switching the itineraries for Walker and Ben to run into each other, that was pretty cool. Going back to the episode, we have Ben still talking about all the messages that he's brought in. And we kind of left off here where we had Dion Govender basically completely discredited. He's lying out of his mouth for everything that he's said. Everything that the messages that have come in have completely corroborated Ellie's story, completely dismantled Dion Govender. But Ben went back and listened to the interview that he had with Dion, and despite him now knowing that he was completely lying, he was still convinced that Dion was convinced of the stuff that he was telling, because just the emotion and the passion that he had behind what he was saying, it seemed authentic, terrifyingly real.
That's why actors are so good at their jobs.
Especially Oni ones.
I mean, you could sit there and lock yourself in a room and think the same deal over and over and over again to portray this character that you're meant to be. And for a split second, you're believing you are that character. Like, it's what actors do. I mean, they literally completely switch their mindset. So for him to act like this person, A, he's extremely good at what he does, and B, it makes you wonder how long he was trying to be that person. It makes me wonder when Oni actually approached him to act out that particular person.
And we're jumping around again, and we didn't quite specify this, but at the end of the episode, we have Ray come and tell Ben that Dion actually died and whoever he was talking to was a fake, which is what Bio is referring to. Yeah, it turns out the guy died 7 years ago.
Yeah.
That was kind of a shocker.
And when some people were supposed to be dead, they still aren't. Well, they weren't.
It's right, like John's parents.
Exactly. So this whole thing is just one giant shady situation.
And one thing, too, is the bigger the lie you try to cover up, the more potential holes it has. And Ben completely not going along with just Oni interviews completely just broke into and started cracking every single hole, every single loose thread that Oni had out there that they didn't even account for.
Well, it's just crazy to me Oni would have that many holes. Like,
for someone who's had a reputation of doing just the job and as the job has been given to them, you really think that they would have thought twice about having to really worry about all those holes? Because given Ben's past, even though he was out for 6 years, everything that he's done before then, he's taken the story exactly how Oni has told him to do it and, in his words, regurgitated it back out to the masses.
Yeah, but you got to look at it like this, too. It's, if they're trying to cover up something, they got to look out for the possibilities that what may happen.
I mean, they don't even trust their own operatives.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if they honestly wanted this to be... If they didn't want any sort of details getting out, they could have covered this a lot better than what they did.
They could have, yes. But like Petra said, they weren't expecting Ben to have his own contacts out in the outer colonies for this story.
There's a lot of things people won't predict. I mean, this is
obviously a big one for Oni.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's like an organization that big that can prepare for something that could happen. They did a sloppy job. Like you gotta always look out for what a bad situation could be. You know what? They gotta have a backup plan. Like, well, maybe he finds something that he did, like he did before, like as he did. You know, maybe they would have had a backup plan for that, but they didn't. They didn't have any sort of idea of what he could have done, and it was sloppy.
Not saying it wasn't, but that's how we've been told from the podcast and his recordings of what happened.
Right.
So call it Oni being extremely sloppy. Call it Ben got a freaking lucky break.
Mm.
Truth of the matter is, he had all of these loose threads from every angle in every interview that he did from Oni sources, comparing it to just one source, Ellie Bloom, who completely started the dismantling of every Oni setup. Except for Mendez. We haven't gotten to that part. At least not in this episode. But Thomas Wu, Jacob Walker, Dion Govender, and Gabriella Dvorak. All four of those not completely discredited, but Dion was completely discredited. Gabriella's story relies on the insurrectionist occupation, which didn't happen. And then Thomas Wu.
Well, not on the scale that she puts it.
Right.
Right. Well, not in Elysium City. And then Thomas Wu's story about obviously him getting paid to say what he said, and then Jacob Walker not even being where he was supposed to be, kind of thing. So every single one of those Oni interviews that he had completely washed out just from one person, and then following that thread, unraveling the lie, or starting to at least.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad when one person's story can start a chain reaction so big that can discredit four Oni setups.
Well, there's a lot that's into this one person. There's a lot of people that has some sort of tie with Master Chief, or right, just this within this story. I mean, you got to look at it. I mean, he's could have had a friend that could have led on to different things. Like it's just a giant tree that could have led to different things. I mean, this person, as famous as he is, you're going to have a lot of people that have some sort of association with him in some way.
But his initial talk with Ellie was the start of the thread, and then everything came in to support Ellie's story. And if it wasn't for him talking to Ellie just that one time, it would be a completely different story. It was just one person that he talked to in that first episode.
Right.
That started this whole chain reaction of loose threads.
How did he? I lost. But how did he get a contact? How did he get to contact her exactly? Like what? Who? He just.
It was a contact that he had just being out in the outer colonies.
Okay.
Someone that he knew.
Right.
From Eridanus 2 from Elysium City. Just someone he happened to know.
I mean, that's just like going back to the same thing with Oni, too. It's like him being out in those outer colonies, they didn't prepare for him to call up people he may have met. You know, I mean, like that's what I'm saying. That just doesn't make sense to me. Like, sure, he's going to sit there and regurgitate the exact same thing they want him to do. But they never thought of who he's met in that 6-year time period that he didn't do a journal on somebody or whatever he did or was done. You know, a lot of stuff can happen and a lot of people can be met in those 6 years. I mean, that's what I'm saying, like planning ahead, I thought was something that Oni would have done a little bit better. And I don't mean to constantly go back to the same thing. But yeah, it's I know. Just...
I mean, Futch is in here from Portal to Dawn, and he basically kind of says, yeah, Oni didn't expect Gerard to really go out of what Oni was providing him.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like Oni to do that, but from someone who got as high up in the journalist ranks, I use that term loosely, as Gerard did, I mean, in his prime, it sounded like he was at the top of the top.
Right.
So take one of your best men who's always done the job that you've asked them to do. You're not really going to expect them to not do the job. It's like saying someone that you've hired for 20 years to go do your own propaganda for your own campaigns and stuff is suddenly going to go out where the campaign has a negative effect and have one person say something bad and actually see what's really going on and just come undermine this person after like 20 years or so. It usually doesn't happen. If you're with someone for 20 years, it's usually building up enough trust to really solidify that you're always going to be doing whatever I ask you to do kind of thing.
I suppose. I don't know. We got to move on to the next thing. We can go on this for hours, but it's like, I honestly feel that they've had some sort of similar situations that they could have prepared for. I mean, they've been
possibly
they've done so much shady stuff. I mean, especially with just everything that they've done so far, it's like one loose slip. It could have ended them. You know, they don't left no stone unturned, so to speak. It just
that was poor English.
Whatever.
Anyways, I get what you're saying.
So like it just to me it just doesn't make any sense to why they couldn't look out in the future for future events that could have ended up badly.
They very well could have, and they probably should have.
But anyway,
yeah. The other part that the messages he received corroborated was there was no disagreement of what happened to John between the ages of when he was born and 6 years old. But there was a big gap between the age of what Ben thinks is six and his first day of boot camp at 16, which we know is not true. Because once they were abducted at age of six, and again, if anyone hasn't read the books, this is getting the spoiler territory. John was basically brought into boot camp at the age of six. So we have that part of the story, and I'm guessing that's the part that Ben is now going to be trying to figure out what really happened between when John supposedly died, or as we know, abducted, and when he became a Spartan. And the stories lead up to that age of six and then just are in shambles because of John supposedly being dead for all intents and purposes of what people know. So we have, to follow up on that, two people who placed John alive between the ages of 6 and 16 in Elysium City, and that would be Dion Govender and Gabriela Dvorak.
Which have both been discredited.
Right. During this whole process of him getting his podcast ready, he actually reached out to Ray to have him look up Walker's background and check on him because of the incident that he had on the plane. So after explaining all of his theories with the messages and stuff, he said that Ray was coming to his house to give him the info on what he found out about Walker. So we jump to about halfway through the podcast and we have Ray come in and start, or at least try to start talking about what he found out. But Ben was so wound up in theories that he had come up with and things that he found out that he was just rattling off stuff to Ray, just making him even more confused about things. Things about Dion's story being discredited, completely fabricated. Same thing about Gabriella's story. And he even said he came up with some of his own possible Oni cover-ups of what they could be really hiding about John. And then comes to this bastardized conclusion of pulling medical records of John and his parents to cross-reference them without getting noticed. And why the heck would you even think of doing that in the first place?
No idea.
Well, to confirm that the Master Chief is John, you know, because he's got this death record and he hasn't been able to let this death record go yet. So if, you know, he's got to disprove, you know, he's looking to disprove that death record. So if the if the DNA matches up between the Master Chief and John's parents, well, then the death certificate or the death record is, you know, that questions it or that disproves it.
Right. The funny thing about that, though, is even though within the podcast, it seems like a completely illogical conclusion, it would have been the right one. Because something like John's medical record would have been behind Oni's, like, probably one of their deepest medical archives because of all the stuff with the Spartan program and the research that Halsey did on how specific the qualifications were for children to be in the Spartan 2 program.
Mm-hmm.
If they were even to attempt to look up his medical records, there'd be Oni flags all over the place on that information.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because that's exactly the way to go. That would spell out his entire history from the ages of 6 to 16. And I feel bad for people that don't know the fiction and are listening to this podcast, because we know the freaking answer, and we know that even though that conclusion on its own within the podcast sounds absurd, it is so on point, which is so cool in my book. That
It would be definitely on point.
I get chills.
You know, Ben would still have to come up with some more facts to determine actually what happened. You know,
the medical records.
Yeah, he'd make them, you know, the chances, well, as we said, the chances of him actually getting hold of those medical records or medical records is pretty slim, especially without being detected. I doubt that he would be able to get a hold, even if he got a hold of a part of it, I doubt he'd be able to get a hold of his full jacket when it comes to his medical records.
Well, and that's the whole thing of, would they be able to access his medical records without really drawing any suspicion? And John's parents, maybe they might get away with. John, on the other hand, hell no. If they could even find them to begin with. Because you know Oni has those records. They have research from what Halsey did for her selection process. You have the research on the effects undergoing the alterations for getting ready for the Spartans. You would have that whole history there. Heck, you'd probably even get leads to the Spartan program itself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, could you imagine what Dr. Halsey would spill if she ever got, like, if Dro ever got a hold of her? Like, that would be the solution right there. Like, that would be his biggest lead to this entire story. It'd be interesting to see.
It all depends on how much self-incriminating evidence she wants to present.
She has a vendetta.
Yeah,
she has a vendetta against Oni, but, you know, there's this thing called self-preservation.
But if you think about it, though, this story is kind of going against Oni because it's exposing the Oni lie. It's exposing the cover-up.
Which she was a huge part of.
Yeah, but I'm sure she's willing to sit there and show a little bit of truth of things that she did.
I mean, she generated 75 clones without Oni's permission. You know, there's...
Right, that's the one little part. That's the one little part that was not Oni's control. And I think, I honestly think she would be the kind of person that would take an opportunity as big as this one to just completely expose what really happened.
What Oni's all about.
I think she's like past what happened, what she did. I don't think that really affects her anymore, because to her, like, she did what she was called to do, and to be honest, did save the human race.
Yeah, I mean,
she did.
She did the job she was meant to do. I mean, she did what she had to do to complete it. I mean, like I said before, I'm sure she to take out the biggest problem that she has, and I mean, Oni's done some pretty harsh things, and I'm sure she wants to see. Some, like you said before, she has a vendetta out. I'm sure she doesn't care about some of the stuff that she... Yeah, sure, she'll have some guilt in that. I mean, if you stole a bunch of kids and replaced them with clones that were going to die regardless. Like, yeah, I would feel horrible too. But if it meant to take out something that I wanted taken out, yeah, you're going to believe I'm going to sit there and reveal a lot of stuff about myself. Like, there's no questions asked on that.
I just don't, you know, if you look at the way she acts in Ghost of Onyx and up through the Kilo 5 trilogy, she's trying to pay a penance for what she did to the Spartans. You know, to the Spartans, not to their families, to the Spartans. But on the other hand, you see the move she takes, you know, just to cover her own butt. It's just, I don't know. I don't know that she's over that part of it yet or not. I think right now, as far as in the universe, she's just all focused on the Janisky thing.
Very, very possible. And that's one of the reasons why I think Pharaoh, or that would be another supporting reason why I think Pharaoh is not Halsey. Anywho, after spilling his guts out about his theories and whatnot, Ray tells Ben that as far as he could find out, Jacob Walker and Gabriella Dvorak check out. There's a full military history, full military background that support them and their careers. Not necessarily to disprove what or to reinforce what they said, but he couldn't disprove their identities within the military, within the UNSC.
And they were there where they said they were there.
Right. Now, whether or not their stories about John were true, he didn't confirm that, although Ben was kind of taken aback by, no, these people were lying. I have multiple people telling me, real people, that the things that they were saying were lying. And of course, Ray specifically points out that he couldn't discredit their identities, which it seemed like in the podcast, Ben didn't really understand fully. Did anyone else kind of get that vibe?
Yeah, no, I got that too.
So you have to kind of as well understand exactly what he's saying.
Yeah.
And then because of Gabriella Dvorak and Jacob Walker being in Ben's Mind Valley, he starts to go on this rant about how Dion was completely discredited and that there was no way that anything he could have said was true. That somehow Oni had picked on this guy that we obviously know was an actor and not actually Dion. But at the time in the podcast, how Oni must have picked on this poor old guy and convinced him of a past that didn't really exist.
Yeah, I mean,
which we know is not true anymore.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that don't add up with this whole story. Like, it's just crazy.
Loose threads. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole point of the series is, you know, to send you on these wild goose chases, you know, trying to hunt the truth.
There's a lot of hunting.
Oh, yeah. And we still got a lot more to go.
Yep.
The next part of the podcast is by far my favorite moment in all of Hunt the Truth.
So far.
So far. Yes. The moment where Petra comes barging in and freaking tackles, or, I mean, we have an audio recording, so we don't really know what happens. It'd be awesome to see an actual video of this going down, but Petra coming in and just completely letting out against Ben because she found out
that... she's in there kicking his butt.
Oh, I'm sure.
Dude, she was unloading on him. There was no remorse in that at all. Like, she... like, you want to sit there and record me and make me look like a fool? You're done. Nope. Wrong answer. That whole scene that they did was like perfect. The way Ben reacted to it. Okay. Like the whole scene was just like they did a really good job with it. I mean, it kind of fits her character too because we've seen her in movies how she is as a person. So I can kind of vision her as a person doing what he's doing to Ben.
Yes.
And it was awesome. It really was.
It would, like, I would want to see the whole scene of this episode, like up to the point where Ray walks in the door. Well, I mean, you wouldn't have to include this, but from the part where they're talking and Ray kind of gives him the info about how their identities check out, and then that part where they hear a noise outside the door. From there to the very end of the episode, it would be so great to have that in video form.
Could you imagine if there was a video to every single one of these episodes, like later on down the road? Like some YouTuber or someone comes out and actually makes an actual live action series out of these whole things and just act the whole thing out. That'd be sick. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, Petra has, well, she's got a couple of lines in there that I really like, but the one of my favorites is when she looks at Ben and says, "Sit down." It's like,
oh, yeah, you know, when she tells her to sit down? It's, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like she's talking to a dog and he's like,
yeah. And once again, the dog reference.
Sit down, Ray. Okay. Okay.
Like, well, I mean, that's the closest thing I can compare to it.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
She says sit down and he's cowering, like, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They did a good job. I hope there is some more action scenes like that where someone's getting the crap beat out. Like, it also makes me wonder what she was actually doing, because you heard a lot of stuff getting crashed and smashed against the floor and stuff too.
I think like that was Ben flying across the room.
Possibly.
Not about flying across the room, more of like just kind of stumbling on the floor.
I don't know. Petra's a pretty stout girl, at least the way they've portrayed her so far.
Freaking badass.
I don't want to piss her off.
Neither would I, especially after what we heard from this episode. It'd be awesome to see Keenan and who was the voice actor for Petra? It's that one lady from How I Met Your Mother, and she was in Avengers and Captain America 2.
I can't even remember her name. That's pathetic.
I know Drew was like goo goo gaga over her.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't even remember her name.
Kobe Smulders, is that? Yeah, there we go. Pins Halo. Yep. Yeah. Thank you, Pins, for verifying. Kobe Smulders. So yeah, have Keenan and Kobe like in that scene, I think would be just phenomenal. Anyways, nerding out a little bit. So of course, she's pissed off that Ben was even considering recording her in the first place, let alone actually published an audio podcast with her voice in it. And of course, Ray wasn't very thrilled either when he found out that he was also in the episode. I guess he hadn't listened to him and that he was just following up on what Ben asked him to do. But Petra was kind of pissed. And for a minute, somehow, Ben didn't know what the heck she was even upset about. And when she finally told him, he said he wasn't really thinking about it at the time. And then Petra has this beautiful analogy, in my opinion, of how Ben should know that words can destroy people. And in a way, that's kind of like a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How would Ben like it if Petra didn't really think about using her gun? Maybe she could put it away. Or maybe she could shoot him in the face.
Or she could just drop kick him in the face, one or the other.
That's one of my other favorite lines, is her analogy with the gun.
That was a good analogy. I thought that was really, really classy.
How about
classy.
I just pull out my gun and shoot you?
I could put it away, or I can upload incriminating evidence to the internet. It's not whatever the internet's called in 2558.
Space web. It's also crazy to me that how many actors they have voicing in this. You know, they have her, they have... One of the guys that I did recognize from not last episode, but the episode before when Ben approached him. What's his name? I can't think. Holy crap.
Yeah, episode 5 or episode 4?
4, where they drug him.
That was episode 5.
But yeah, 5. I'm sorry. Like I said, I can't think of his name.
I don't think they ever said his name.
The guy that he
approached. What are you talking about?
The guy that he approached. And they're like, no, you had enough.
Walker. Oh, you mean Walker?
Walker, thank you. I recognized his voice acting from, I believe it's from Mass Effect, if I remember correctly. I think he did a couple of voice deals with Mass Effect. But like, I recognized a couple people in this. But it's cool that they have, her, Keel. What's his first name?
Keenan.
Keenan. They have Keenan. They have all these stuff. It just makes me wonder who's next. Like, every, like, it makes me wonder, too, because Frankie's just been teasing it. It makes me wonder who's next. Some person actually said that I can't think today. I really can't.
Sure, my brain shot, with that, dude.
No.
Me neither.
No, I'm just saying. I wonder who, like, from the Halo universe, someone that we know. I wonder if we'll ever get brought into this series, like someone that we actually, like a voice actor that we recognize.
I'm still not following. Like,
I'm saying that voice could actors. Be. That's
in, no, I know what you mean. Oh, like who else we could possibly see?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were still on
I'm
the
say walking. Like. Gotcha. No. I was saying like we've seen like video game voice actors from him from Mass Effect or whatever. It just makes me wonder if we would see anybody from the Halo universe get brought in to hunt the truth.
There's still 7-8 episodes left. 7 for sure, probably. There's a lot of people they could pull in.
Oh, absolutely.
Really, the possibilities are
endless.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty freaking much. During the whole exchange, going back to that, we find out that Mashaq is also listening in on it and how Ben has been sloppy that Petra has pointed out before. It's nothing new that we don't know. And he's been in the system for a while. And like we mentioned earlier, he was the one that went in cross itineraries for Walker and Ben to meet up. And he mentions that him doing that was to give Ben a choice to make him see Oni panic of something that shouldn't have even been possible. And to give him that choice on whether or not to follow through with the Oni propaganda or to do his own thing. And to,
I still like how they brought Mashaq into the story.
What, for this episode or for the whole, for this, like, the truth?
For this episode. Yeah. You know, how they brought him into the episode. You know, they're sitting there, you know, Ben's sitting there talking how, you know, Mashaq's helped him, you know, make sure that his comms are secure and all this. And, you know, Petra's like, he's probably listening. No, Ben says. And then she's like, Mashaq, are you there?
Hi, guys.
How long have you been in there? A few weeks.
No big deal. Just been stalking you a little bit.
Just been kind of hanging around.
The other thing, too, is that he basically confirms what Petra says, and he says that Ben does things so wrong.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice little nod to what Petra's like. You're so sloppy, and Mashaq's like, yeah.
Yeah.
You're really bad at this.
Good thing we're helping you, or he'd be dead already. I thought that was neat how they brought him into the story, you know, and made him actually part of the story and not just a, you know, like a tacked on conversation.
Yeah, and we're kind of jumping through this a lot too, so we're not hitting all the details of some of these conversations also. But the things with the conversation between Petra and Ben, there's a lot of other nitty-gritty stuff in here which we didn't even touch on. But going back to the point with Mashaq, he mentioned that with crossing the itineraries that he had a professional standard to uphold with giving Ben the choice. And Petra kind of came to the side of him saying that and asked Mashaq, who is the one that contacted you to do this? And that's where we get the name Pharaoh from. Someone by the name of Pharaoh is interested in what Ben has been doing.
Yeah, she also makes the point that, you know, Mashaq is a truther. He doesn't get involved. You know, that's how we go to, you know, who put you up to this? You know,
right.
He's the guy that hides behind the scenes. He's the conspiracy theorist. You know, he digs around for the truth, but he never does anything about it. So, you know, this is Mashaq stepping outside of his normal, you know, his normal comfort zone as well.
Mm-hmm. That, of course, whenever Mashaq puts the name out, Pharaoh, that's Petra's cue to leave. Granted, she doesn't immediately leave, and Ray's actually curious on who this Pharaoh person is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, who would be pulling the strings from that high up and like the Outer Colony ranks to be interested in what Ben has been doing, to go behind Oni's back as he has. But before they leave, Ben, of course, gives everyone the details that... Ray gives everyone the details that Dion has actually been dead for 7 years, which came to a little surprise to Petra. And, of course, after Ray left, Mashok basically told Ben that, or encouraged Ben that he should go find the proof of him actually being dead for 7 years and trying to figure out what is really the lie that Oni is hiding. And of course, he had been recording them the whole time, and both of them actually gave them permission to keep the recording, to use it for his story, and they go on their way. Maybe to be never heard from again, but
possibly.
I have a feeling we may hear from at least Petra again. Maybe not Ray, but Petra, I could see us hearing from again.
Oh, yeah.
No, she's definitely going to be back. Somebody's got to keep Ben on the straight and narrow. You know, there's just so much stuff in this episode. And, you know, sorry guys for being so random on it. It's just, there's just so many things to talk about, and it's hard to keep it in chronological order.
Well, we'll say this. If we kept it in chronological order for this, we would have gone through the whole thing in about 30 minutes and then kept backtracking to everything.
Exactly.
Just with how the episode turned out, because we had so many cuts in here where things could cross-reference each other. And we even started out basically at the beginning of the episode a quarter of the way into him kind of flashing back to, because he was talking about how he received messages for the past 4 days. Then he jumped back to the time just right after he missed the deadline, and then all the Oni calls mm-hmm. and how those stopped and how he had his quiet for a few days, yada, yada, yada. So just as he bounced around a little bit in the episode, we're bouncing around a lot for our little analysis here.
I just but can't Petra wait leaves. Till Sunday for the next one.
I know, right? Petra leaves. Mashok asks him, so what's happening now? Ben's like, I need to talk to Pharaoh. And Ben's like, don't worry, she will be getting in contact with you. Dun dun.
Oh, I can't wait to find out who it is.
Yeah, me too. And that concludes the episode part. At the very end, after the little outro music, there was what a lot of people thought was Morse code to begin with, but is actually a spectrogram. And when you put it through a spectrogram, people found the website stolengauntlet.com. That led to a YouTube video of a Ford commercial that had the same kind of disruptions as we saw in that Xbox UK video a week and a half ago. Yep. 2 weeks ago for this Hunt the Signal campaign, which if you're listening to this podcast, it's already started. So you need to head on over to huntthesignal.com to follow that. And it also had a portion from the bullet trailer of the bullet flying, hitting Chief's helmet, and then it had Stolen Gauntlet under it. Nothing new in the disruption or the bullet part, but it's just another reference to it. And apparently that was a commercial shown in movie theaters.
Yeah, I've had some people say they were watching the
Avengers, you know, the
pre-roll to the Avengers movie, and they saw that Ford commercial with the Oni hack in it as well.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, somebody is spending some big dollars.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't see that. When I went to see the Avengers, I seen the Locke trailer for the Avengers. I mean, some people said they seen both trailers. And I think it was Unishek that said that he seen both trailers when he went to see the Avengers, if I remember correctly. But I seen a lot of Halo. A lot of people say that there's a lot of Halo 5 trailers in the Avengers, which is pretty cool.
I will say this. With how much publicity they're putting out with Halo 5, Halo 4 probably had the biggest publicity budget of all the Halo games to date at the time.
I don't know. Halo 3 with those live action trailers and all the stuff they did with them.
Supposedly, Halo 4's PR budget was bigger.
Well,
from what I heard,
I should say, you know, the dollars spent might have been lower, but that was also several years earlier. You know, inflation, everything gets to be more expensive. But yeah, they are spending a boatload of cash on Halo 5. Microsoft, if you're listening, yeah, send some my way. You know, yeah, a million, that'd be just plenty. Really, 500,000 really get me set.
You'd be set for life, dude.
It just makes me wonder what's next. Like, what's the next trailer we're going to get?
It kind of is that way now with the podcast. I mean, for the first few episodes, it's like, yeah, we kind of know where this is going. But after episode 4-ish, we kind of, I mean, we're starting to kind of question on what's going on. But I still feel there's certain parts that people that have read the lore still have a pretty good idea of what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, but it's unraveling fast.
Yeah. It's interesting to see the perspectives of inside the universe of how that's unraveling. The things I'm really wanting to see, and it depends on really what the overall target audience for this Hunt the Truth campaign is, but what's the juicy stuff in there that's going to lead into Halo 5? Because a lot of stuff that we've seen already is stuff that's just kind of corroborating stuff within the universe of what we have already seen from the books and the Halo games up to this point. There's not much in terms of what could be exclusively leading into Halo 5 that I've seen with the podcast yet, other than Mashok's mention of the weird stuff that's happening in the other colonies. That's the only thing that I think could be taken into Halo 5 that it really isn't talking about anything in the past Halo universe history.
No.
Does anyone else disagree, agree? Anything else?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree. They haven't really done a whole lot of new stuff yet, you know, with the exception of the weird stuff that's happening in deep or in the outer colonies. I'm hoping that, you know, maybe this Sunday or next Sunday we start to get some new information to start, you know, baiting that hook for Halo 5 as far as, you know, the story on it. But I mean, either way, it's still going to be an awesome episode. Just the way they're writing the first six have just kept me riveted, and you know, I'm pretty vested in the Halo universe. But you know, I want the new information. But I'm having so much fun with what they've given me so far. I must have listened to this episode 36 times.
Oh, I listened to it just to point, like, not only because I loved it, but I was also trying to figure out who was in it.
Yeah.
Like, just to pick out the community. Like, good God, the amount of times I sit there and listen to that thing over and over and over and over again. Like, I literally reset it every time. It was annoying, but I could recite the entire beginning by heart. Just about
repeat,
every...
Repeat, yeah, repeat, it was repeat.
Crazy.
Last thing I want to mention about the video before we wrap up is the username was Char Eldy, which is actually an anagram for Dr. Halsey.
Mm.
Coincidence? I think not, sir. Anyways.
Yeah.
Halsey's come back from the future to hack Ford commercials.
Oh, man. One thing I wanted to... One thing I wanted to actually bring up, and this may be a little far-fetched, but do you think we'll ever see any Covenant presence in Hunt the Truth?
That's a good one.
Well, do you think maybe we'll see some sort of Sangeli or something, some sort of Covenant presence show up and Hunt the Truth? It'd be interesting to see, especially who that one individual Covenant or other individual Covenants would be. But it'd be interesting to see where they would go with that if they did bring in some sort of Covenant presence.
Well, you could do a Jackal informant type steal. I mean, you know, Jackals, they'll deal with anybody as long as you have the right currency.
That's true. You could have a grunt, but...
I have a feeling because of how the story's been designed so far, it's mostly going to focus on humanity. My gut reaction is to say, no, we will not hear any Covenant speaking in Hunt the Truth.
It'd be interesting... Like, I know it probably won't, but it'd be interesting to see how they would tie that in, if they did, or if they could. I mean, I'm sure they could in some way, but...
Because like, the only people that are really going to know Chief's past are humans.
Well, not necessarily for... Wait. the past part, but maybe for the new information.
Good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, there could have been some sort of elite that was watching his pals get literally murdered by Chief. I don't know. Like, bring in some sort of like eyewitness to Chief's destruction.
We've come to the juncture, though, where Ben's trying to figure out what happened between the ages of 6 and 16 with Chief, and he's trying to find a lot of the evidence of disproving all the lies to find the truth, as he mentioned in the episode. So a lot of that's going to focus around, unfortunately, Oni at this point, because they're the ones with the cover-up, and he's going to have to find out people who have that knowledge and are willing to divulge it.
Yeah.
And I don't think Covenant's really going to be involved with that.
Yeah, he's still going to be hunting for Chief's story, but you know, there's the point where we, you know, catch up to current time. You know, this whole thing is not going to be all about Chief's backstory. They're going to work into current time, or they can't work it into Halo 5. You know, they've got to get the story up to current events. So, you know, I'm not saying they're going to have Covenant in it. You know, they don't have to. Yeah, it'd be cool, but I do think that it's probably going to focus on the human side of it, but they're still going to have to get to the current events. So it's just a matter of how they do that.
Yeah, I don't see Covenant really playing a part in Hunt the Truth. I'll leave it at that for me.
Yeah, as like I said, the maximum I could see would be a Jackal informant. That would be the maximum I could see in it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Maybe a nice reference. But that's about it. That's going to be it for tonight, I think. Unless anyone else has any last comments. We covered pretty much everything. We jumped around like rabbits around the whole podcast.
I just know, and I'm not pointing at that, it sounds like an Australian dude really does hate journalists.
Yeah. He was definitely passionate in his little spot.
Righto, mate.
Bloody hate journalists.
I have to say
that was a pretty good one.
My favorite line that is like in the top two. My favorite line is when Petra describes to Ben what she's going to do if she ever sees him again. If I see you, I'm going to blow half your face off.
Yep. Anywho, that is it for us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to our podcast. Hunt the Truth episode number 6 is in the bag. We'll be talking about Hunt the Signal tomorrow in a little more detail for those of you listening to us live on Twitch. We'll be doing our regular cast on Thursday, tomorrow, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. For those who are listening to us via download, whether it be through iTunes, Zoom, RSS feed, whatever, we have a video coming up, another Achieving Halo, thanks to Mr. Godzilla T himself. Assault in the Control Room is the next one up on the list. So that will be coming out later this weekend for your viewing pleasure. How many how many achievements have we got in that one?
That one we've got 6 normal ones and 1 bonus one.
Cool.
We've got one that's just based on how many metal kills you get. And that'll vary from person to person.
Right.
How many doubles and triples and overkills you string together. But it just happened to pop while I was recording, so I put it in there.
Awesome. There's a lot of teams you can get through just one playthrough of the campaign, people. It's pretty insane, actually.
You know, so far, the average has been about 6 achievements per level. Some have a little bit more, some have a little bit, actually, I don't think any of them have any less than 6. I'd have to go double check, but.
Well, is that counting like Easter eggs and all that?
That stuff? Is every. Well, the way I'm doing it is every single achievement that you can pick up on one single playthrough through a campaign level.
Gotcha.
So finding the Easter eggs, finding the skulls, all that stuff, which I just found my favorite Easter egg in Halo CE on Assault on the Control Room. And you'll have to watch the video to find out.
Yeah, those skulls are going to be a pain in the butt when it comes to Halo 2, though.
Yeah. Anybody that is looking for a guide to the inbred skull, I recommend going over to RUL on YouTube and watch Green Skull's video on it, because I will not be reproducing that one, because I still have yet to get it to pop.
Yeah, a lot of achievements are not popping for me either, still.
No, I can't even get the skull to show up.
On which one was that?
Inbred.
Okay, I don't know anything about that. I just know... Maybe I do know. I'll talk to you after this.
I know you have to hit a specific amount of checkpoints to get the skull to spawn, and at least the way it was in the original Halo, it only worked 1/7 of the time.
I don't know.
That math hasn't been working out for me.
That sounds like the one you're talking about for Halo 2 map.
Hey, yeah.
On Metropolis.
Wait, I thought we were talking about Halo Assault in the Control Room. What? I'm lost.
No, we switched games.
Oh, I missed that transition.
Sorry, I thought I made it clear Halo 2, but apparently I didn't.
No, I know what you're talking about. Naked Eli was actually trying to do that the other day, actually a month ago, when he was live streaming. And, like, this dude came up with a crazy mathematic equation to, like, I can't even remember. I'll bring up the video once I find it. But, like, he just did this. Well, you got to do this first, and then once this respawn gets tripped, you have to do this, and then you have to do this, and this, and this. And I'm like, everything that was so jumbled together actually worked to get that skull. It's just crazy the amount of stuff you had to do to prep for it.
Well, if you watch some of the older videos, like from Halo 2 Vista or Halo 2 on Xbox, you know, they had these theories like you had to have a full human sniper rifle. You had to be carrying a full human sniper rifle. You had to have a beam rifle with 77 rounds left in it. And it just all this weird stuff. You had to take this specific path, you know, through the level to get the skull to spawn. And I don't think anybody's ever nailed down the exact scenario to make it spawn, because I think the randomness of, you know, it only spawns 1/7 of the time is true. You know, you can do the steps and get them all right, but the skull may still not spawn because it's not that random chance in those 7 tries that it will spawn. And, you know, the next time you try it, okay, you think you did all the checkpoints correctly, but you missed one and didn't catch it. And then the skull didn't spawn. It's just really random. You know, I've put a lot of time into trying to get that skull, and it hasn't showed up for me yet.
Thus is the Halo life.
Yay.
Boo. So, yeah, that'll be coming out this weekend. So thank you, Godzilla, for doing that.
No problem.
You can check us out on podtacular.com. You can head over to our forums on our conversation. Blah, 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 blah. Join our conversations on Hunt the Truth and other topics regarding Halo 5 and the Master Chief Collection. And you can obviously find us on our social networks, Twitter, Facebook, Twitch, Instagram, YouTube, all that fun stuff. Make sure you check out our podcast network. That is thepodcast.com, where you can check out shows like Guardian Radio, Critzcast, Work in Progress, How to Murder Time, and The Learning Cliff. If you're looking for good gaming podcasts, or just looking for something else to fill your ears with during the day, I definitely suggest checking out the podcast network. Some great guys over there. Again, we'll be returning tomorrow at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursday, to talk about the news updates. We'll be talking about the Hunt the Signal campaign, the contest that just started earlier today, and whatever else that we have to cover within the community. So make sure you check that out tomorrow as well. And we will see you hopefully on Friday as well with our game nights. We will be back on the Master Chief Collection. Still no word yet on the hot fix, but as far as we know, it's still coming at some point. So hopefully very soon. Until next time, everybody, keep on fragging hacked lines.
No one says hacked anymore.
What else would you want me to say? Throw me a bone.
I don't know.
That's what I thought. See, that's what I thought.